You want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media? You are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. This episode is produced in partnership with West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
This is The Best of the West, inspiring women with real stories, hosted by West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
Hello and welcome to Best of the West. I'm your host, Danielle. And today I'm speaking with Anya Kwiatkowski, who is a research scientist at Triumph and adjunct faculty at the University of Victoria in the Department of Physics and Astronomy. Anya focuses on understanding the ground state properties of radioactive ions using ion trapping techniques. These properties are relevant to investigate nuclear structure, nuclear astrophysics, and precision tests of the standard model. Anya leads TITAN, Triumph's Ion Trap for Atomic and Nuclear Science, which performs precision mass spectroscopy and in-trap decay spectroscopy. Anya received her Bachelor of Arts in Physics and French from the University of California, Berkeley. She pursued her PhD studies at Michigan State University, performing her research at the National Superconducting Cyclotron Laboratory. After a four-year postdoc at Triumph, she became faculty at Texas A&M University in 2015 and later returned to Triumph as staff. Last year, she received the Stuart J. Friedman Award in Experimental Nuclear Physics from the American Physical Society. Welcome to the podcast, Anya.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us about what occupies your days?
Oh, wow. I love being a physicist. It's so much fun. And what I love about it, why I wanted to be a researcher was I get to learn every day. And no 2 days look the same. And so I could be climbing a ladder to repair something, crawling on the floor, soldering, playing with liquid nitrogen. And nowadays that I'm staff, there's a lot more meetings, a lot more spending time with students and postdocs, mentoring them, looking forward and trying to find the next horizon, what's going to be big or interesting, exciting, technically, scientifically, or anything to do. So it's a lot of fun.
That does sound like a lot of fun. Quite a few different activities there. What brought you to the field of physics? What inspired you to pursue that?
It was a curious turn of events, actually. So I really liked math, but I didn't think I would ever do physics because I wasn't sure if I was really enjoying it. But what I realized a bit later is I like math. I was good at math, but I didn't like how abstract it was, and I didn't like that I couldn't connect it the way I wanted to the real world. And then it was a very easy transition to go to physics and say, okay, I've got all of what I thought was black and white mathematics to explain the world around me. And that was where I dived in or dove in. And then I just had such a wonderful number of mentors that brought me to nuclear physics, and I never left because it was just too much fun. Just a perfect fit for me.
Yeah, I hear that a lot with physicists, that they really like to learn and investigate things. So how did you end up specifically with your position at Triumph and the University of Victoria?
I would actually start this in a very weird way by working in a daycare. During the breaks, I would read my physics books, and I shouldn't say we're during the breaks. The kids were asleep. I wasn't negligent in my job duties, but they were taking their naps because they're 2-year-olds, and I would read my physics book, and it turned out that one of the teachers would occasionally get a visit from our husband, and he worked at Los Alamos National Lab. So he noticed the physics books, invited me to work a summer internship with him, turned out I ended up going to someone else, Anna Hayes, who's still there. And that's when I fell in love with the nuclear physics. She led me to my next research supervisor, Stuart Friedman, and I fell in love with traps. And I was an undergrad, so I didn't really know the difference between an atom trap and an ion trap. They seemed just like a trap. Let's do this. And that's where I ended up in grad school, is chasing traps with my thesis advisor, Georg Bolan. Buckets of fun, trapped at ions over millions of times now. And I just really wanted to keep going with it. Then I ended up at Triumph doing more of the same thing with these ion traps. And I realized this was home for me in terms of the technical and scientific outlook. So wanted to try for faculty, and I was lucky enough that I found a path that brought me into faculty and then actually back to Triumph, because it's extra special in my field to be at the radioactive beam facility, home there, mm-hmm. and get all the opportunities of being next to it and having my experiment literally on the floor,
yeah.
permanently housed.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So it sounds like you did most of your education and everything in the States. What brought, like, was it a big decision to come to Canada? How's Vancouver? What's that like?
I was really excited. So my postdoc supervisor and my colleague now is Ken Stilling, and he had built up Titan, and they had so many world records at the time. And the basis of Titan's reputation are something called halo nuclei. And it's this fantastic little exotic structure of nuclei that would be classically, in the classical world, just cannot exist because the valence nucleons are just so loosely bound that they occupy space they could not unless quantum mechanics kicked in. So I wanted to figure out how you could do this groundbreaking research that was making such inroads in our understanding of nuclear structure, was technically so freaking hard. And I wanted to learn. And I came and I got these opportunities to go branch out from not only what I knew about just penning traps and mass spectrometry, but other types of traps, other directions of research. And it was fantastic. So world's best. Why shouldn't I try to learn for the world's best and take advantage of it?
Definitely.
And of course, Vancouver is a fantastic place to live, fantastic place to enjoy life. It's a little rough when you're sitting going, okay, I'm spending 12 hours in the lab. It's a wonderful world out there, but it's worth it when you're enjoying what you're doing.
Absolutely. Note, this podcast is not brought to you by the city of Vancouver. So you talked about some of the key people who helped you get to where you are now. Is there anything else you'd like to say about that? Any key events other than, you know, that chance meeting in the daycare center?
What I would say for sure is that I feel really lucky because I've had so many wonderful mentors and advocates. And part of that was pure luck, but part of that was work to get this. I call it an army of mentors because I feel like I have so many and I'm really lucky in that. And that's something that's absolutely critical, I think, in doing it as part of your network. I still go back to some of these people who trained me, Anna, for example, as an undergraduate, and asked for advice. And so now I have my army of mentors, some of whom I go for science, some of whom I go for, how do I do this leadership thing? Because I'm not getting it. Those ones are more happening more frequently these days. So we have that army, and I was really lucky to build it as I moved up.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important lesson for people to learn is I've heard it called your personal board of directors, so to speak. People who have those different roles that you can consult on and really be honest with them about the things that you're struggling with so they can help you through that.
Absolutely. And also because I think the more you grow, the more you step out of the shadow of your undergrad or your graduate supervisors, and the more you need to step into your own. And so you want to sort of sew across the different bits and pieces of advice you get from everyone and make it into your own, make it into something that just works with your own identity.
Absolutely. Anya, do you want to share with us some memorable moments that you've had along this journey?
Absolutely. So there's of course, they keep coming, and there's a couple of different ones. But I remember one of the ones I really remember was working towards my PhD and my getting through the defense. And it was such a rush to get through because everything seemed to occur at the same time. The lab was available, hit the critical moment, had to write the thesis, and it was such a lead up into it. It was, I was living in on just adrenaline. And I remember I was waiting for my committee defense, my defense committee, excuse me, to finish their deliberations. And it was, you know, the palpitations. And then I remember them coming out and going, oh, yeah, that was pretty easy. We knew what we wanted to do. I just needed to figure out how to sign the form. And that moment of relief was overwhelming. And I don't think I'll ever forget that it wasn't like, whoopee, I passed. It was just, oh, thank goodness I didn't waste that last month of trying to scramble. It was such a pivotal moment because the moment that sank in, I was like, okay, so in 2 weeks, I need to pack up my stuff and start heading out to Vancouver. So let's do this.
On to the next thing. So whoopee, I'm sure, came later. The celebrating eventually came, I'm sure.
So many other moments. And then more recently, you mentioned I received this award, and it's really a little overwhelming to know that the community noticed it and wanted to acknowledge me in that way. And I'm the first recipient of the award. Stuart was one of my first supervisors. And so it made it really a poignant or meaningful moment to be able to stand on stage and acknowledge his effect on my career, his influence, and then to have it feel full circle to come back and get it something in his honor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does sound pretty meaningful. So we talked a little about what drew you to physics, but what kind of got you started in STEM in general? Like, did it start as a kid? Was there anyone influential?
Both of my parents are in STEM, and so they always pushed me a bit to go into STEM, but they also had a really big philosophy of just be a productive citizen, so whatever you do is great, and that's how I ended up with my second degree in French. They really were very encouraging if that's what was my life passion. But I was in a very good program when I was in elementary school that gave me the opportunity to excel as far as I could in math. I don't know why it was only in math and not in other things, but math it was. And so I kept excelling in math and going a little bit beyond what was expected. And so that's sort of what inspired me to really enjoy math and enjoy that black and white clarity that came with it. And physics hasn't been quite so black and white, but it was that opportunity to use that skill set, but use it, as I said, in a way that helped me figure out why is the sun yellow and
yeah.
Why does the microwave work for certain foods but not so well for others?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I talked about this on my podcast episode that when I took quantum chemistry at UBC and I finally understood why they made us memorize that like a P orbital looks like this, you know, like that it's a math proof. Like you could actually write it out and it's a thing. Like being able to apply those numbers to real things around you is so cool.
It's kind of magical that you have nature, and yet we can write it down in these beautiful, short, elegant little equations that somehow translate into everything we're seeing around us. It's just really magical and incredible to me.
Absolutely. All right. Anya, do you want to tell us about like what your journey was like through your undergraduate and your graduate degree programs? And there were quite a few of them. And what that journey was like?
It was a lot of different adventures. So going to Berkeley had been this sort of, I don't know if it's possible or rational for a five-year-old to dream of going to Berkeley, but that would have been my dream school for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So I was super psyched to get into Berkeley and just go. And Berkeley at the time had you enter the College of Letters and Arts as an undeclared major, and then you had to do something like 7 breath classes a year, 4 languages a year, you know, a lot of stuff, basically 2 years worth of general education. And I was pursuing this. I knew I wanted to keep my French up and a connection to it. And it ended up being I was taking the physics, and it was actually in university when I decided, okay, this whole math thing is not working out the way I like it. I'm just not making the connection and feeling that connection anymore to it. So that was a bit of a traumatic moment for me to feel like this is not working the way I had planned my life since I was relatively young. But the other thing was that was awesome is I really wanted to do that year abroad experience. And the physics department kind of said, well, but you really can't transfer anything. So I said, okay, well, I guess I'm going to be a French major. When I come back, I'm going to be a physics major. since that's how this apparently works. So I went to France for a year. Loved it. It was fantastic. And it really taught me so many things. You really don't realize the quirks of your own culture until you live in another culture. And France was sufficiently different to really bring out some things I had not appreciated about being American. It was also fantastic because the struggle of trying to communicate in a language that I thought I was really good in, but not good enough for everyday experience. That was interesting. It's made me a lot more sympathetic to the foreign students and how much of a struggle that is for them to come in and have to transfer from thinking in their native tongue to English, and they might have learned British English, and now they're told that all of their spelling is garbage. So that was a good experience. And the classroom and the culture in the classroom was scary different. So that was my culture shock. It was great. It really taught me a lot also. How do you survive for 10 months without coming home to the parents and getting to rest up and recover mm-hmm. in the sort of that family home or the safety net? Really great experience. Also did some physics there. And it kind of also, again, blew me out of the water with how different their approach was. It was much more structured than it was at Berkeley at the time. But it was great. I also got to take classes that were never offered at Berkeley when I went back. So I came back to Berkeley. It was great. I came out with one or two classes that I couldn't fit in a typical 4 year. So I ended up staying for a fifth year, which ended up being awesome. Then I had time for research. I had time to kind of take all of the elective classes that I didn't appreciate until I was a postdoc, realizing, well, you never have a chance again to be spoon-fed. I call it spoon-fed. you know, all of this information about material science or these other fields, gravitational theory, whatever. So I got to soak all of that up over my fifth year, super senior moments, whatever you want to call it. And that was really great. And then I went out to Michigan State, total change in culture, climate, ambience. But it was also another really cool experience because it's probably the best hybrid of national lab and university. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely great. It was such a little, it's like a little petri dish just designed to grow you graduate students in nuclear physics, and it was absolutely fantastic. I know that this field of ion trapping is kind of like the weird cousin of nuclear physics. You're part of it, but you're kind of on the fringe, and sometimes you're not always as welcome as other parts. But it's cool. You're definitely part of it. I tried going to an AMO, Atomic Molecular Optical Conference, and I was like, this is definitely not my home. Back to the nuclear physics, this is where I'm going to belong, and I don't look back. It was
awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. Do you ever get to use your French since now you're, you know, in Canada? And do you have collaborators that are in French or anything like that?
So what I love about – so first of all, no, I don't get to use my French as much as I want to. In fact, right now I'm trying to learn German for a number of reasons. But it seems like Michigan State and also at Triumph, there's a lot of Germans I'm working with. Now my husband's German, so that's another reason to learn German. But it turns out that we do have one collaborator. He lives in France, but he is actually a Canadian Anglophone who now, of course, speaks French totally fluently. But it is kind of ironic that the French side just never worked out. So that's, I would say, the only disappointment of having put so much effort into French and fought so hard to get a degree and make it part of my life is now I'm going, well, I guess I could have done this in German and it would have been just as good.
Oh, hindsight. It is always 2020. But I mean, it sounds like you got that really nice experience with that fifth year because of that. I mean, I think a lot of people feel that intense pressure to finish in 4 years. And especially as you're figuring things out and kind of changing directions, 5 years can really just take the pressure off.
5 years is also when you really, you can breathe. And I think to be really relaxed in that fifth year made such a difference. I would have had to cut some corners in order to make sure I graduated in 4 years. It wasn't impossible, but I really appreciated my parents just saying, why sell yourself short? If we can help support you and get you through in 5 years, we encourage you to take the 5 years. So enjoy that. Really take the time to enjoy it. It's something you just definitely don't realize. And now, of course, I have to go, thanks, Dad, you're right. You don't realize how great it is to be a student until you stop being a student. You don't realize how much flexibility you have. You don't realize how much everyone wants to cater to your needs and your level at that moment. And the higher you go with each step, the higher those expectations, so the less catering you get. Mm-hmm. It was a really great opportunity.
So do you have any other like tips or tricks that you'd recommend for students who are starting out, maybe in physics, maybe just in science in general?
Get a study group. Oh my goodness. That was great in undergrad, but graduate school, I'm not sure I would have survived without my amazing study group. We had also a lot of fun. We nerded out a lot. We had physical constant days once a month just so we could be nerdy and have fun. So we'd have like electron day on, May 11th? Because it's 5.11 kV or 511 kV. So, you know, we had so much fun. The other thing was find a philosophy to deal with mistakes. So little ones I learned to let go, but the big ones I had to learn to find to move past them. I had to learn to make a lesson out of them to move forward. And that was pretty rough. And then I already said, have an army of mentors. Don't be scared. Reach out for help. Mm-hmm. And never think that your supervisor or research advisor, whomever, knows something, because they really don't always know what's going on in your life, in your what you're doing in the lab, or those type of things.
Good advice. Okay, so we're going to get just slightly negative for a second. Why don't you share with us some challenges that you've had to overcome along the way?
Okay, so I can think of two really big ones that happened in graduate school. So the first one was that I ended up deciding to get jaw surgery while I was in grad school. And with the American system, that meant quite a bit of hoop jumping with the insurance company, which I was not quite prepared for originally. But what really happened is that it was fine. I had my braces, blah, blah, blah. Not a problem. The guys always told me, all the guys in my lab would always tell me the horror stories, never the positive things about having braces. I survived. But then the surgery actually happened, and it hit me much harder than I expected. And then ultimately, you don't really know when your date is because you're just waiting for that opening in the surgeon's schedule. So life continued. And it so happened that it got scheduled something like 2 weeks before one of my first international conferences, which luckily happened to be hosted by Michigan State University. So it was in the neighboring town. But I had surgery. My surgeon had originally said, oh, yeah, you probably can even go back maybe in 2 to 3 days. I did not go back to work in 2 to 3 days. It hit hard. I was so grateful my mother flew out to take care of me. The first week was really just struggle to eat, sleep, clean up in there, but it was pretty rough. And so I really wanted to go out to this conference and present my poster. And I was so swollen still at the time. And part of the healing is your jaw gets wired shut. So I couldn't really speak. It's like your teeth are separated a millimeter, but you can move your tongue, but the lips are just... You can't move them the way you can. And it can affect, in my case, it did affect the sensation, but not the motor control. The issue there is, how do you know how to move your lips if you don't know how much? I couldn't tell if it was 1 millimeter I moved it or 1 centimeter I moved it. I just couldn't tell. So this was pretty sloppy eating and pretty sloppy talking. And I tried to go for one afternoon. It was exhausting. And it was a pretty long summer to get through that. So that was something I don't wish on anyone. Please, if you can avoid it, don't do it. It's awful. So that was one of the big challenges, was preparing for that, getting through that and the stress of it. And then the magical celebration when those braces came off after the surgery. My office mate celebrating with me by giving me a giant plate of caramel. It was magnificent. I love caramel. So that was a magnificent moment in life.
All right, let's go to the air. So tell me, what is your favorite thing about your field?
Being in physics is obviously the learning. Every day you get that opportunity to learn and do something cool and fun and exciting. The thing I love most about nuclear physics is the community I do it in. I would say it's the friendliest competition I've seen in physics, because the way that it works with these radioactive beam facilities, there's only a couple of places where you can do your experiment, and every facility has a specialty. Triumph is better than anyone else for certain radioactive beams, but NSCL, where I did my PhD, is better in other ones. And so you were planning your experiment. So what that means is we have just enough overlap that we can be competitive and we can validate each other and verify that, you know, you did your job correctly and I did my job correctly. But you also have those little niches where, yeah, I could have tried to do that, but let's be honest, I can't really be competitive with you. So why would I bother? And that means that you have your corners, and it's that really friendly competitiveness that I really love. And it's a big enough community to be international, but somehow it's weirdly, and the more I think about it, weirdly friendly, and mm-hmm. really reaching across oceans to help each other out. And it's, I love that aspect of it. You might be my competitor, like Geiseltrap over in CERN is probably our biggest competitors to Titan. But at the same time, we're reaching out and we can set up exchanges between students or things like that and learn from each other, mm-hmm. chat, share technical information. But then sometimes get really weirdly guarded, like, no, can't let you know what I'm working on, my data analysis.
It sounds nice that you get to play with the boundaries of how friendly or how competitive you are and don't have to stick to one thing.
Exactly. I didn't want something cutthroat where we're constantly putting people down. Somehow I need some of that teamwork sense in my life.
Yeah. So how do you see your research field kind of evolving in the future, and where do you think it's going to head?
That's a really tough one. I think nuclear physics is in an interesting place because a lot of people don't see it as being cutting edge anymore. I had one professor who said, isn't everything done with nuclear physics? thanks for telling me my PhD is worthless there, material science prof. It's reaching an interesting place because it's becoming challenging and it's making much more incremental gains right now. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we also have those beautiful moments where you really have this inspiration and you really push very far. And we're having them, whether that's technically or scientifically in our understanding. So theory-wise, for example, we've made such headway in the last 10 or 15 years with what are called ab initio, these first principle methods. Can the theorists come up with how does a proton talk to another proton or neutron from first principles, as opposed to sort of saying, well, this behavior looks like this function, so I'm going to model it in this function. And we made enormous headway with that. So then the question is, how are we going to use that in the future? Part of me is a dreamer and says, well, maybe what I'm doing will connect in some way and we'll explore the boundaries and we'll figure something out that will really connect to society via maybe energy, cancer treatment. But that's what I'm hoping. And then one of the definitely big areas on the frontiers, we just had confirmation in one of those LIGO events, the ones I thought might never happen. And it showed that we had a binary neutron star merger, and we think that the rapid neutron capture process happened. So this was that magical moment. I feel like right now I can't go to any nuclear physics talk where we don't talk about the multi-messenger era of astronomy. But the idea is now we're really bringing together all of these different aspects. And we don't know enough of the nuclear physics to get a grasp of what's going on. We know that stars are fueled by reactions and decays, but we don't actually know what those nucleus, those isotopes involved actually do. It's really, really exciting. And then we want to bring that together with the neutrino people, now with the gravity people, with the observers, and bring it all together and see, can we figure this out? Mm-hmm. And can we actually understand, why do we have supernovas? Why do we have binary star mergers? So I think that's going to be one of the things that is going to be really exciting to follow for at least the next 5 or 10 years.
Nice. That sounds exciting. So going to your research a little bit, how does it relate to the world at large and that positive impact aspect? Where can we see what you work on?
The technology I'm using, for example, ion trapping, is coming up in a lot of different places. So